Science and the Paranormal Hour. And this is Dr. John, and my co-host Seraphine Hurley is not going to be with us tonight, but she'll be with us next week. So you're listening to us on 107.7 FM radio, New Orleans, United Public Radio. And I am really excited tonight because we have a very special guest and a very special topic. We're going to be talking about extraterrestrials. What are they? And where do they really come from? And my very special guest and good friend is the owner and producer of the network we're on, Joe Montalvo. And let me tell you a little bit about Joe. A lot of you may not know about Joe. Joe's kind of modest, and I had to do some research to find this information out. But Joe is, everyone knows, he's National Director for the International Community of Alien Research, ICAR. And they have close to 7,000 abduction cases on file. And Mr. Montalvo has been an active researcher and investigator of alien contact and abductions for over 20 years. In 2002, Mr. Montalvo began hosting Wake Up America, Wake Up USA, a UFO study talk show. He is also the host of many popular national radio shows and owner and producer of the award-winning, yes, award-winning 107.7 FM radio New Orleans. He's earned 3 degrees in areas of advanced electronics and avionics and has served in the Navy. And thank you for your service, Joe. And Mr. Montalvo is also a TV and radio personality and has been seen numerous times. And I know many of you probably have seen him on Ancient Aliens, numerous appearances coast to coast with George Nouri and other history and Travel Channel specials. And the man is amazing. He's number one in his field. And Joe, thank you so much for offering to come on as my guest. I'm really excited about this. Thank you.
Oh, well, it's always great to talk to you. It's always a lot of fun to hang out and chit-chat about different things. And as long as it ain't that crazy COVID-19, I have to hear about every 5 minutes on the TV.
I
tell people all the time, somebody wrote to me the other day and said, well, I don't know why you're being rude about it. So I'm not being rude about it. I said, I'm just tired of hearing about it. I said, look, I've been told to stay home. I'm staying home. I'm being good as much as I can stay home. You know, I can't always stay home because, you know, we have a maintenance company. So occasionally we go out, you know, just shows you how COVID is. Guy calls me the other day and he goes, one of my customers in one of his apartments has got a toilet problem. He said, oh, man, he said, I know y'all don't want to go out here to fix this because of the virus. I said, no, we got somebody who'll go take care of it. And you know, we sent somebody out to take care of it. But we get calls, like we had roof leaks come in this week we had to go take care of, and then we're going to have a big rainstorm tomorrow, so we might get more roof leaks from that. So, you know, but we're not really working. I mean, for the most part, we're just hanging out, you know, hanging around, waiting for something to do. I mean, we got lots of bids out right now, but nobody wants you in the house right now. That's what the real problem is.
Yeah, I agree with you. I stopped watching the news and reading about it. I mean, I'll try to keep up with it. But, yeah, I've been sheltering for a couple of weeks. I've been in my cabin on the lake and just waiting for the weather to warm up so I can sit outside. But, you know, I'd like to start by asking you about ICAR, if you don't mind, because, mm-hmm. you know, my listeners are different than yours. Everybody mm-hmm. knows about ICAR. But could you maybe tell us a little bit about how you started it, what it represents, and what are you doing with it today?
ICAR is the International Community for Alien Research. I was, along with several others, it was 7 or 8 co-founders when we started out. And what happened was we'd all been MUFON members, you know. I'd gotten my way pretty far up in MUFON, and my wife was a research specialist for them. And we did a lot of things with them, and we did a lot of investigation. But the problem was, is it still this way today with MUFON, by the way? They were the black hole of Calcutta. Whatever you sent in just disappeared. You never got any rebuts back about it, rarely ever got anything. If it wasn't a case that was going to get them some publicity or press, they weren't interested in. And they're still the same way today. You know, I know lots of people who send them cases and then call us. You know, there's been just this year, I've had 50 contactees say, look, we tried to contact MUFON Star Team and we don't even get a response from them. You know, and I get more than that, but, you know, a lot of cases that you get are not legit cases, but these are legit cases. And I just wonder if they're just overbooked or overhandled. And I tell people sometimes it takes us, you know, I don't like hating on other organizations because sometimes it takes us 6-7 months to get back to somebody. We're really busy right now, but the organization was founded, one, to help prove that abductions exist, but more, to find out what ET was doing. You know, I got a lot of friends who chase lights in the sky. And I tell people all the time, you're not going to get to the truth chasing lights in the sky. It's a lot of fun, and I do a lot of sky watching myself, but you're not going to get to the truth. Short of ET falling down in your front yard, climbing out of a spaceship and saying, hey, I'm Bob ET, and I'm here to probe you, you're not getting any answers that way. So with contactees, what we started doing is, first off, we started finding them and bringing them in. And when I was with MUFON, we had set up what we called abduction criteria. A couple of friends of mine from MUFON, a couple of directors, we got together, and we're talking 35, 37 years ago. And we got together, it might have been about 35 years ago, and we found every abduction case we could, everything that had been reported from MUFON, everything we could find reported to everybody else. And all together, it took us 2 years to accumulate about 5,000 cases. Which, you know, it was a lot back then. Today it's not that it's a big deal, but back then it was just unbelievable. So we went through them, and we went through what we've been looking for abduction criteria to find out if there's any similarities from contactee to contactee to contactee to help us maybe get an idea of what ET's doing. Yeah. Well, because MUFON had become the black hole of Calcutta and did not want to have anything to do with abduction research back then at all.
Really?
They don't have nothing. And look, even today they're kind of standoffish about it. Even though they say they got this star team, they're just not. Come on. My organization has put out so many things, from blood type studies to DNA studies to all the different questionnaires. MUFON hasn't done any of that. They can't even claim one of those as a project. As far as the only project I really – and then, I mean, come on, Bigelow came in and gave money to go out and help them with abductions and stuff, and they just, you know, didn't do anything with it. I'd say what they did, but I don't even want to go there, but. The thing about it is it's not really what they are. They are really a sightings organization. That's how the organization's set up. That's how their directors are set up. It's really about UFOs. And they don't even really track UFOs as much as, say, Peter Davenport does, or the U database does, or some of the other databases out there that track them personally. But, you know, they are a place where you can go in and put a bit. I don't know what they're up to last time, but last time I'd heard, they only have 3,000 or 4,000 members. We have 56,000 members. Actually,
really?
Wow. If Ryan is right, we got 65,000 members worldwide.
How did you join? If somebody wanted to join
you go to the website, and there's a place on it that says Join ICAR. You click on it, fill out the application, and away you go. Even though somebody lately said they've been filling out and I haven't been getting them, so I'm going to have to go check. Maybe we got something hanging up. They go out to four different emails depending on where you fill it out to. But I'll have to go check and make sure we're not missing anybody or anything. But no, you can go do it like that, and they'll come to us if you're interested in joining or becoming a member, or if you just got a report. There's several places on there to make reports. There's several places on there to read about reports. Matter of fact, at the end of summer, the whole website, about every 4 years, we go in and remodel the website. Well, we're in the middle of doing that right now. So somewhere about the end of June, maybe the end of July, the new website will be up. And because what happens is over years, you know, things get broke or they change out projects. Sure. The original website is nothing like the website that is today, or the one that was in between. There's been four or five versions of the ICAR website, so we got that one coming up. But anyway, originally, that's what ICAR is about, accumulating abduction criteria, and we make about 50 to 55% of our abduction criteria known to the public. Almost everything you hear people talk about today is how we know someone's abducted came from us. We get very little credit for it, but you can tell because, unfortunately for them, I've been on the radio for 25 years talking about it. So when they go to try to make claims, I just go find an archive from back in the day. So, well, this is long before you were thinking about it, wasn't it? And I busted MUFON to all kind of people for it. And just recently, when we put out the blood type study 14 years ago, and then again 8 years ago or 7 years ago on Ancient Aliens, I watched half the field go on coast to coast and take credit for my work. And what was even worse is they didn't even the people calling in or didn't even defend it. I was like, oh my God. And there was some pretty famous ufologists jumped on the bandwagon. And then to get even with them, Ancient Aliens put me on with those people so I could claim it, you know, as who's the one who's done it.
Good.
I mean, you shouldn't have to do that.
No, that's disgraceful. I mean,
terminology that's used in the field today comes from us. I mean, it's just a sad state of affairs when you have to get there. And I'm not really big on defending us because it takes up too much of my time. If I was to go around and run around every time I heard somebody use our information where I give us credit, that's all I'd do. That's all the time I'd have. So every now and then I'll bring it up. But for the most part, you know, we're here to find people. Well, about 15 years ago, right around Katrina, right before Katrina, I decided we had a director's meeting. And a good friend of mine, DeAndre, who is still alive, she was one of the founders. And God rest her soul, I really miss her. I called her my honesty stick. because she would never let me get out of a certain realm. That's what she was there for. She, and technically she was national director. I'm international director, but she was there to make sure we stayed on the straight and narrow. That was her job. You know, no getting crazy, no getting outlandish, no going out and saying shit that we can't prove or we don't have enough data on. And it was really good for the organization. But anyway, at that time, this is when I decided to really launch into the blood type. We'd already been doing work on it for about 10 years, for about 15 years for that. So now it's about 30 years into it. But we'd already been doing data and research on it. So we decided to see if ET preferred a particular blood type or a particular eye color. And that's what launched that project. Now, here we are. How many ever years later, last I checked, there's 87,000 people have either taken the online thing where you tell us your blood type or actually sent in an application or filed an application with ICAR as an abductee. Anyway, it goes from those three sources, that's where we're sitting at to now. And today, we know for a fact, 65% of all people taking are Rh negative, maybe even 70% are Rh negative.
You're kidding. I had no idea it was that high.
And out of that, half of them are O negative. So there's definitely a correlation to this. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. There's something there. And what really is funny about this is most researchers believe that abductees make up about 15% of the world's population. So what's more interesting than that is Rh negative makes up 15% of the world's population. Boy, that, isn't that just coincidental? Those two slap right over the top of each other. We do know there's contact with brown eyes, brown hair, and O positive blood, but they're not the majority, and they should be, because brown eyes make up 95 or 96% of all eye colors on the planet. 96% are brown. 85% of all blood on the planet is O positive, but yet contactees, at least half of them have green or blue eyes. And just to help y'all people, more than 70% of American presidents had blue or green eyes. Bet y'all didn't know that. And well, guess what? Rh negative.
I did not know that. That is crazy. Wow.
More importantly than that, go watch your Hollywood stars and see how many of them or TV stars have blue and green eyes. More than half of everybody on television. Remember, these only make up 4% of the world's population, but yet seem to dominate the entertainment industry. And not just that, dominate in politics. It's something to do with their personalities. It's a very outgoing group, I guess. These are things, because of these studies, we find out that really have nothing to do with what we're doing, but it's just statistics that come into being while all this is going on. More importantly than this, think about this. So most of the world, when you look at blood types, is, you know, it's like 38% this, 15% that, 7% this, 36% this. But Central and South America, 99% O.
Really?
99% dead. The maps are on our website. And these come not from any crazy UFO people. The guys we work with were three of the most famous hematologists on the planet. The maps that are up there are furnished by one of the top three hematological experts on the planet. This isn't, it has nothing to do with UFOs. These were blood studies done before. These, what attracted me to these guys is because, you know, South America is a huge place for alien contact, alien abductions, and alien sightings. Sure. And it's just coincidental. It has a huge O blood down there. It's just crazy. And I mean, that's the places where we have two different type of skulls than regular humans are found in live people. These people aren't dead or even fossils. These are live people. We know that the Mayans, deep ancestors, their skulls shaped slightly different than ours. And then the original Nazca family coming forward, their skulls are shaped a little different than ours. At first, everybody said it was because of boarding of the children. Maybe it was a defect that stayed, but no, it's been too many generations since then. So, you know, that's stuff you can't explain away. That's people who should be extinct, like the Neanderthal or the, you know, something that doesn't exist anymore, but they still do. And these are areas where ET seemed to visit a lot. So you got to kind of wonder if there's some kind of descendancy there. But long story short, so ICAR originally was to establish what aliens may want and how we can determine who's lying and who's telling the truth. Since then, we still do that. But now we have gone proactive to finding people who do not know they've been taken.
Yeah,
that's what the blood type study was for. That's what the DNA studies for. That's what the reptilian gray and human alien studies are for. It's also what the job studies for. There's several studies we've done. I think it's 15 altogether that we run together so that we can find information that will lead us to people who do not know they've been taken. So just the Rh negative. So if I meet you and you're Rh negative and colored odd, and you have a fascination in certain types of religion or in dragons and vampires and stuff like that, it's a 90% chance that you're a contactee. 90%.
You know, that's really funny because I meet some of those criteria, and I had this is really weird. I haven't told many people. I had a dream one night of some aliens like operating on me, and I get a phone call from another abductee who never called me before at the same time, like at 1 a.m. And he said, "You called me and said you needed help." And I said, "I never called you." And the next morning we checked and none of our phone calls were registered on our
That shit list. Happens all the time too. That kind
really?
Of stuff happens. Yeah, it happens all the time.
Wow.
You get people, people call me, and now we do more Skyping than we do phone calling, but people will call me up and you can hear there's somebody listening. As a matter of fact, sometimes you'll hear them breathing on the phone line because they got the open line. Right. But yeah. And then see, in the old days, I still have it. I have a box that lets you know if there's an open line, if someone's listening in. So you can even run it on Skype. So what it does is as calls go through it, it registers the call. And then it sets up a signal that lets it know if anything else joins the call. So say if I get a phone call on Skype and I pick it up, let me know that I just picked up that call and it's registered to the group. But if a line opens up that we did not bring through, it glows red, letting us know that someone is an open line attached to the call. So it worked great on the phone lines. And then a guy came over with a little piece of software to update it. And it works great for Skype now. So it's always running. And almost and since I've been doing radio, it's rare that the red light is not. It's on right now. It's rare that it's not on.
I would suspect if you had it on my phone, it would be red all the time also.
Yeah, it's
the people
these,
I work with. Hey, a question. When I was a professor, I was a professor of neurophysiology and biochemistry. I taught neurophysiology at Johns Hopkins. I also worked in the human genetics lab at Johns Hopkins. Have you ever thought of interacting with them for data, or maybe you're already doing that? Because they, have one of the best sets of data for blood type and all that type of stuff.
Well, I think when, what's his name, Maurice was doing it, he worked with several different, well, so did the other guy. As a matter of fact, all three of them had different connections with different colleges around the country, but not just here. I know there was some stuff that went overseas, and there was a bunch of stuff that came out of a couple of big colleges out of the UK. And what they were doing is this, what happened was, is when I looked at all this data for their regular research, and then I correlated to what I was doing, when I first contacted all three of these guys, actually I contacted 10 in the beginning. Nobody would return my call. Nobody. So then five of them, I wasn't even going to bother contacting just from the response I got the first time. So the other five I contacted back, two of them just said, don't ever call me again, blah, 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 you crazy, blah, 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 blah. Fine, it didn't hurt my feelings none. And then the other three were like, look, and the guy said, why do you keep bugging me? I said, let me send you over what I have that correlates to your data, and you tell me what you think about it. I said, this is just from groups of people who we've been working with, and this is their eye colors and blood types that they've been sending us. I said, I just find it odd. I said, maybe it's not aliens. Maybe it's some kind of deficiency that Rh negative and green and blue eyed people have. Maybe there's something wrong with them. Maybe when 35,000 years ago we jumped into the Rh negative, maybe it changed our brain some way and it makes these people see things or hear things or whatever. Maybe their imagination's are way better since so many of them turn out to be movie stars. Well, at that point, the guy's like, well, you know what? Maybe you're on to something. And then when I told him the amount of contact that's in South America, and the type of blood it was, and then he came back and he said, well, and I said, yeah, I read it on your site. And he said, well, that's just kind of a weird correlation. So they started looking into this. So they started correlating all this data for me and putting all this together in a project. And I just started sending them everything I got. Every time we get new data coming in, I'd send it to them. And they were just stunned. They were just like, well, there's something to this. Obviously, these people with these blood types and these eye colors or either something's taken them or something is in their brain making them think they've been taken. Nobody wanted to sign up, which I understand they're doctors and they don't want to sign off on it, but they were stunned by it. As a matter of fact, two of them I even keep talking to today. Every now and then I send them a new data packet, and they were thrilled when I opened up the DNA study and showed where these family lines came from.
Yeah, I want to hear more about that too, because that's I mean, I should really get involved with your group, because this is very interesting. And I could also possibly help you with some of the universities, because normally, you know, as a professor, Joe, I don't want to interrupt, but as a professor, when I pick up a phone and call a professor from another university, you know, professional courtesy, they usually, you know, and years ago, a famous abductee, I don't want to mention her name, once sent me some diagrams she supposedly was given. And didn't understand them. And I looked at them and I thought, this looks like a DNA molecule. And at that point time, there was in the news a professor of biochemistry, I forgot, somewhere from a southern university, who speculated what alien DNA would look like. And when I looked at some of his diagrams, I thought, boy, these look similar. So I contacted him and he sent me more of his raw data, three-dimensional, and it was very similar. So it was very helpful. But you know, if I can help you like that, I would love to. This is totally fascinating. I didn't realize this was part of ICAR's research and work.
This is actually what we do. This is what gets people, because people hear me, when they hear me, they're like, oh, well, you know, you talk to contactees. Well, yeah, we talk to contactees, but we're trying to understand, you know, what's going on here. And you got to remember, and I tell people this all the time, when I started this, you know, well, let me see, I'm 57 now, so 38 years ago when I started all of this, I didn't believe in alien abductions. I thought these people were crazy. I'm not kidding. Wow. I thought they were, not only did I think that, I thought they were batshit crazy.
So how did you get started? I really wanted to ask you this. What was the trigger?
I had met some people when I was in the Navy that said they had encounters and seen stuff when they were flying. And I said, yeah. But, you know, pilots are very observant. It's one thing I learned early on. They're very, very observant people. And some of the people who were in the service with me were either, you know, were ex-police officers and stuff. And they had told me about stuff they had seen. And then I had a couple other pilots. So when I got transferred to the next base, I was out in San Diego. And then I went out to the East Coast for a couple of weeks, and then I went up to Tennessee to tech school, and then back out to California to LA for HARP duty. And before anybody writes, HARP duty is recruiting duty. I had time in between. I didn't want to go home, so they sent me out to Cali for HARP duty. It's where you help them convince people to join the military. But anyway, in all of these places I had been traveling, I was meeting more people, and I was taking military hops. One thing about Navy or military, it's great, people. If you're in the Air Force part or the Navy part where you fly, you can take military hops anywhere. It don't cost you anything. As long as they're going somewhere and they've got space, you can hop on a plane, hop off the plane. Like, I wanted to fly down to New Orleans. Me and four of my friends came and spent a week in New Orleans because we had time off, so we just hopped on a plane, came down, flew back. We used to do that, fly all over the place. And I would talk to people on board craft and stuff like that and ask them questions. And I'm like, wow, man, a lot of people are seeing this. And but even then, I was thinking, oh, this is Russian or Chinese or some other crap. And so then I get out of boot camp. I get out of tech school. I come home. I'm back in New Orleans, and I meet some people. And they're very intelligent, very well educated, older than me, you know, 10, 12 years older than me. And they started telling me about having alien abductions. So first up was a couple. One was a professor at Tulane University, taught advanced physics. Okay, this is what he taught. Now, if this would have came out, he'd have lost his job then. His wife was a politician. And I'll just tell you this, she was a big politician. She was in Congress. So both of them are telling me this. I'm like, yeah, whatever. And these were drinking people I met through drinking and stuff like that, because I did a lot of partying when I was young. And then I met some other people, and then I met another woman who told me they had it. And I had met about a dozen people that had told me they had this kind of, first off, John, it was really weird that they were just coming into my life out of the blue, because I wasn't doing research or anything. They were just coming in out of my life blue. And then I met my wife, and her and I got to talking about it one night. We were back into witchcraft back in those days. I was studying with Crowley's people, and she was studying with Gavin Yvonne upper East Coast. And that's what we were into. And then more and more people I was meeting was telling me. So then one night, about a year after I knew my wife, she starts telling me about this event she had one night. And I said, babe, you've lost your bleeping freaking mind is what's going on here. But because of everybody else that told me then her, I knew all these people were saying. These were not crazy people. They were not doing crazy stuff. They were living everyday normal lives, and that's what they were living. And they didn't want anybody to know about it. So I said, well, I got to look into it. So I called MUFON, I joined MUFON, my wife joined MUFON, and we started working our way up, and then we met Gregory Avery, the Orb Master, who was the Louisiana State Director, and we were moving up in the organization, and more people I would meet and tell me about it, because really I was about the only person in MUFON at the time that was even doing abduction research. And I had to talk other people into helping me, but anyway. So we're getting all this going, and the more people I'm meeting, the more I'm like, son of a bitch. So I started keeping notes and having people fill out this little short 25 questionnaire to just try to get some kind of, you know, is it the same for John? Is it for Thelma? Louise is having the same as Chris. And I'm just trying to figure out what's going on, what type of aliens are taking them. So we're going through this. And back then, and even today, it's mostly grays, reptilians, and humans. That's the three main, as far as abduction goes. Now, there's three other races you hear about. But don't ever believe that there's 56 types of aliens coming to our planet. There's no proof of that in any shape, form, other than some crazy people running around saying it. Even when you look at the Mesoamericans and the Middle Easterners, because there's a lot of activity there, and out of Australia, it seems like they're only really talking about these three types of aliens. And even in the Egyptian lore and the Sumerian lore, these are what they're talking about. So it doesn't really seem to be anything else. I mean, whether they're here or not, those are the ones that seem to be doing the harm, or whatever you want to call it. So we're looking in there, we're getting more and more criteria, and that's when we decided to do the 5,000 thing. And then Linda and I went to Gulfbreeze to go do – we went on a vacation. It was going to be like a 14-day vacation. We hadn't had any time off, and we were making really good money at the time. So we said we're going to go tour the Panhandle. So we're going to start in Pensacola and work our way all the way down to Panama City and stay a couple days in each hotel. Anyway, we ended up losing 11 days there. And when part of the case came out and it had military abduction involved, MUFON didn't want to talk to anybody. They just didn't even have – matter of fact, I sent a letter to Walt Anderson because we were friends with him by then. And 2 years goes by. The letter comes back. My wife says, hey, our letter came back from MUFON. I'm like, what? This thing had been shredded into a million little pieces. And someone not only taped the envelope back together, but they taped the freaking letter back together.
Oh, you got to be kidding.
I mean, this thing was in at least – I don't even know how they did it. It had to take hours, maybe days to put this letter back together. And then they sent it back to us. So then I seen Walt somewhere else, and I asked him about it. And he said, I don't know what happened there. And we didn't. I mean, nobody really knew what was going on, other than things were like we were getting followed a lot, and getting a lot of interaction. We were at a meeting, at a MUFON meeting, at Gregory Avery, Gregory was an attorney, and he had a law office across from Impastato's, which is a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And we used to go there and talk. He had a library, and he had these little things you plug in the wall to make it where people couldn't hear us and stuff. Well, on a couple of occasions, we're sitting there. I'm looking out the window one day, and this black van pulls up with these tinted windows and parks sideways across the street. And I said, who the hell is that? And what are you doing parked in Impastato's park lot like that? And why hasn't somebody in the restaurant come out and said something to him? So I said, I don't know. I told Grass, it looks for me. I'm going to go walk over and see. So I walk over there, tap on the window, going, what is some bitch who got a dish like this big around stuck to the window, listening and trying to listen to everything we're saying? This went on many, many times. Usually when you got too close, they would just drive off, you know, and go do their thing. But it got to the point where we couldn't get any further with MUFON. It was just, you know, I'd really gotten kind of disenchanted with them. There was just nowhere to go. MUFON wasn't offering any venues for contactees. They weren't willing to help abductees. They didn't even want to hear about it. If there's any kind of military abduction involved, they didn't want to hear anything about it. They were just really looking for nuts and bolts UFO cases and nothing else. Now, so, you know, go ahead.
Were you, I'm sure you've been followed by the military, black helicopters. I bet all that stuff. I bet you got a 100 stories, right? Because they're interested in what you're finding.
Oh, we've been following them. On many occasions, we've been threatened a few times. But you know, it's weird the way they do things. Like, I'm at work one day. I got a crew up working on a roof, right? On one of my owner's properties, we're out there. We're working on a roof, and I wasn't working that day. I was just standing on the roof, bitching. Had a big crew up there, and we were topping this roof. So I'm standing up there. I'm dressed nice. I'm screaming at everybody, and I look up. This white SUV with tinted windows pulls up. And I'm looking at this thing with this weird look like, yeah, it just looks suspicious. Don't know why it looks suspicious. It's just it. These two guys get out in these badass looking gray suits. Pretty sure they were Armani. Beautiful suits. They were definitely tailored suits. And trust me, people, I'll show you my closet. I know what a suit is. Wow. So, you know, the guy looks up at the roof and he does this number. And he's pointing and he's doing this. And I'm like, so I'm looking around. I said, okay, who's in trouble with the Fed? I said, who up here is, because I wasn't. I'm like, who up here is in trouble with the Fed? Somebody must have pissed the Fed off and they looking for y'all. Fess up. Well, nobody would fess up. And the guy kept doing it. And I'm pointing at everybody and he's shaking his head. So I finally went like this and he goes, Oh, shit. So when I did it, the crew's like, the guys are behind me going, you want us to come down with him? I'm like, no, you stay your asses up here. I said, if anything happens to him, you call 911 or something. And so I'm walking up to the thing. I'm bebopping along. Come down the ladder. Go walk across the street. And as I walk up, he unbuttons the one button he had buttoned on his suit, takes one finger and pulls it back over his 45 so I could see it. Oh, so I'm like, oh, shit. No doubt at this point, some kind of Fed. So I get up there, and he looks at me. He said, look, Mr. Mentaldo, we want you to know we really appreciate what you do. He said, you're a wealth of information. We listen to your show all the time. We're logged into it. He said, now, you had an issue with the alien agenda. And he said, I know you've been told before, don't talk about the alien agenda. And I said, well, sort of. He said, no, don't talk about the alien agenda. And then he goes, your wife is at home doing this right now, dressed in this and doing that. Your son's at this school. Oh, yeah. Getting ready to go over here to his friend's house. They knew where everybody was. Oh. He said they knew where my mom, they knew where my whole effing family was. And none of them are even, I mean, they're spread out across four states and they knew where everybody was. So I was kind of like, okay. He said, look, he said, it would be easy to disappear you. He said, you are on the road all the time. He said, you do, think about it, Joe. He said, you're doing 80 to 130,000 miles a year on the road. He said, you know how easy it would be just to have a rig run you off the road somewhere or pile over the top of your car and kill everybody. And he was more, wasn't so much threatening me as he was my family. So I said, okay. I get the message. I'll stop talking about the alien agenda. So about 10 months go by, and I'm on the air with Alfred Weber. And Alfred would not leave it alone. He just kept bringing up the alien agenda. And it kept throwing off everybody in the everybody was getting thrown off every 15 minutes, not just us. It was kicking the station off and the guests and myself, but it was kicking everybody who was listening off. Not off our servers, off their own private servers. God. Yeah, they were binging them back. So next day, I'm sitting at the doctor's office, right? My phone rings. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay. I thought I had it off, by the way, but it rings. And so I pick it up. I'm listening. The guy said, what did we just tell you? He said, do you not care about your child and your wife? He said, he said, look, and then he tells me, you know, what my kid's doing at the very moment, what my kid's doing.
Oh, my God, I can't.
He said, your wife just walked into work. She's just doing this. She's putting on her thing, and she's getting ready to go to work. I was like, my wife is a general manager for Tanti Development to apartment complexes. And so I'm like, okay. He said, no, you know, I said, I did listen. I said, I can't help it when people come onto my show and go off on tangent. And I said, I see you were bringing down the service every 15 minutes. He said, we're only going to tell you this one more time. He said, stop it. He said, look, he said, you know, we even feed you information because we want you to talk about stuff. He said, we just don't want you going in depth on alien. He said, look, we'll even give you some room. But we don't want you going in because we were getting into what we thought the alien agendas were and what was coming and how it was going to happen. And they just did not want that being talked about, period. And it was catching on pretty good because it's kind of a end of the world scenario in a way. And they just wouldn't, you know, he's like, no. So I'm like, okay. We'll stop and we won't talk about that anymore. We'll go on. And then from now on, I get light harassment. I call it reminders. Like one night, there's a white SUV following. First off, we're going to a casino. We're not going out doing no UFO stuff. We're going to a casino. That's like 2 o'clock in the morning. We're going the back way through the swamp. We got bored and we decided we were going to go out. So we get in the car. We're driving down this road in the middle of the night. I mean, it's like 2 a.m. I'm flying. I'm doing like 75, 80 on this little swamp road. I look up behind me and I see this white SUV. I'm like, this guy's tagging us. And Lynn and I get to talking. I said, I bet you it's one of them guys listening to us. So I reached over to her ear and I whispered to her real low and I said, this is what we're going to do. So we come flying up and said, you know what, baby, we're just going to hook a real, we're just going to go real fast past this lane and just lose them. So right as I got, I mean, I was cruising, right as I got up to the side street, I just cut it and took off down the sideway towards a casino. Well, they couldn't stop in time because they were in an SUV. If they'd tried to turn, they would have flipped it. So they shot on past. Well, they locked up the brakes. Smoke's all coming out from underneath the car. You hear him slamming in reverse. And I'm cruising. I mean, I'm zipping at this point. And so we leave him in the dust because I'm in a little car in an SUV, and he's a turvy, curvy, swampy roads. And if you don't know him, you're going to get killed flying down. So I get to the casino. I park. I get out my car. I'm laughing. Me and my wife's kidding around. I said, yeah, we left him. So I look over. I still was smoking cigarettes at the time. So I looked over to flick my cigarette off the side. And who do I see pulling up on the floor underneath me?
Oh, no.
So they get out, and they just smiling real big and pointing up at me. I was like, he's son of a bitch. They follow us around the casino all night. And but we didn't do anything. I mean, we were just going gambling. That's what we were going to do. Matter of fact, I won a couple times that night.
This was their reminder that we're still watching you, and you better watch
just,
this.
What
are they really afraid of you? Maybe I shouldn't ask you. I don't want to get in trouble. But is it, you know what they don't want you to reveal, basically, right? And they want
there's
you
a couple,
to.
There's what? A couple of things. First off, like he said, one of the things that irritate him is he said, I have a knack of speaking in a matter of fact way that people listen to. He said, most people who would talk like you, people just think they were crazy. He said, but it's something the way you speak and something the way your voice and the way you command it. He said, you speak in fact. You know, it's alien. I said, well, to me, it is fact. And he said, yeah. He said, but for some reason or another, you convince people that when you speak like that. I said, well, because that's my job. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm trying to help people understand that this is going on and it's freaking real. And he said, well, that's one of the problems. He said, you know, he said, you went over to Alien Agenda, and he said they seen a 4% spike in people making reports of what they thought alien agendas were.
Wow, really?
But I told him, I said, what does that matter? I said, if it's not the real agenda, who cares?
Yeah.
He said, yeah, but Jerry said, sooner or later, somebody's going to stumble across like you did and just start spewing out stuff they're not supposed to. And we've been slapped for talking about abduction criteria. Things like the blue plasma. The blue plasma was a big thing when I released it because contactees would always report seeing this weird blue color. They could never really – it's like a blue inside a blue, like electric blue inside of a cobalt blue inside of another blue. It's just this really weirdish kind of translucent but very dark blue. And nobody could figure out what it was. So what we started doing is
Joe, where would this blue be? Would it be around the abductee or next to them?
Sometimes it would. A lot of times they just couldn't remember what it was. They could only remember that there's this weird blue associated with their contact. So we started programming contactees. We still do this to this day, by the way. We'll take a group of contactees anywhere from 20 to 50, and we'll give them a question, sometimes two, and we'll have them repeat the question all day long before they go to bed, before they get up. I mean, when they're getting up in the morning, just constantly repeating in your head. And what happens is when the alien takes you, the first thing that happens is they repeat that question telepathically. And a lot of times the aliens will answer the question without thinking about it because they're telepathic. So, and sometimes there has been consequences for sometimes some contactees have been punished for it. But for the most part, they figure, oh, wow, look, they're smart. They figured out how to talk to us. And you ask this question, and a lot of times they'll give you the answer. So when we found out, the first answer we got back, that it was a blue plasma that the gray ships used. The gray ships actually, it's alive, whatever this blue plasma is. So it self-replicates. It's used for fuel on board the gray ships. It's also used by food by the grays. And this was very important to find out. On top of that, they immerse humans in it completely. They'll just drop you in a vat of the shit. You can breathe while you're in it. It rejuvenates your body. Helps rejuvenate your mind. Everybody who goes in, it says they come out feeling way better. And it sounds like a lot of times when they do harsh experiments to the people in their 20s, they put them in this stuff before they send them home. So it kind of helped them to feel better after all that stuff that they've done to them while they had them. So that was interesting to find out. But more importantly, we never could understand why people always call them grays, because when you listen to a contactee, they say they're blue or translucent or whitish, brownish color, but they never call them gray. Yeah.
Interesting.
So what we found out is the grays absorb their food through their skin, almost like an osmosis. They absorb it through, and the more they absorb, the darker their skin gets. So it's like whatever race they are, there's the brown grays, the white grays, and what people like to call the gray grays. Well, they're really translucent is what they are. So when they absorb a lot of this food, it makes them almost like a cobalt blue color. That's why people – and then as the food wears off, it lightens up and the skin kind of comes like a grayish muddled kind of gray color. As the food gets more suspended, they become almost like a translucent color. It also does it because there's white and brown grays as well, and it does the same thing to them. It just kind of tinges out their skin colors until it comes back to the original. We found this out, and it made a big difference because we didn't know at first it was three different color grays. We didn't know at first it was like four different size grays. We didn't know that there's a what do you call them, a cyborg gray. He's half gray, half cyborg. And those are actually physically or mentally connected to the 3 foot grays. It's like a working buddy almost. It's like when you link yourself up to a computer. So if you're doing something and you're telling your computer to do something, so you're both doing separate things, but you're controlling both at the same time. That's basically what the grays and their little cyborg counterpart do. But they do have independent thoughts. So I found that interesting. So we couldn't understand because people kept saying they're automatons. No, all the grays we had heard about were just grays. They were just, you know, 3 or 4 foot grays, and they were gray, and they were these alien things. And then we found out that we found out about their teeth and their feet and their hands. And then we realized that there was a 5-6 foot gray and a 7 and a 9 foot gray. The grays are set up like a bee.
So they are taller than the people.
Yeah. The queens are around 9 foot. What we like to call the guard males, which are winged, are around 7.5 to 8 foot tall.
Could that be some big, of the skeletons that they've discovered in some of these caves in Tibet? The other thing I wanted to ask you real quickly, you know, you mentioned blue in the like Egyptian culture. There's Egyptian blue, which people still haven't deciphered. The Mayan is Mayan blue. It seems like blue color is very much portrayed in these ancient societies. And I'm wondering, is because of alien contact? Could that be possible?
It probably is, because both the reptilians, humans, even though they, for some reason, have limited use of this stuff, they both do use this blue plasma. But they must get it from the grays, because for some reason, theirs don't seem to be self-replicating. It just seems to be like an after product. But the Chitons pour the grays, it just grows itself. Until it gets to the vats of full and then stops. The ship does the same thing, though. The gray ships are very interesting. First off, the grays become part of the ship when they're driving it. So in most of the ships, the saucer-type ships, they have three slots in where they, I guess, the bridge would be. They sit in there, and then the slot kind of emerges with the three grays. They basically become part of the ship. Most of the ship is controlled telepathically. There's no physical instruments. And when there is a need of physical instrument, it just comes out of the side of the wall or out of the floor or wherever you happen to be. And it makes whatever you need. Like when people are on the table, so great description. Lady's talking about it. She's in this room. She goes in this room. The walls and floors are lit, but there's no sign of lights anywhere. It's just like the walls and floors themselves light up. So while she's standing there, the gray does something, and all of a sudden it looks like a water thing bubbling up from the floor, and it keeps coming up, keeps coming up, keeps coming up, and it gets to a certain height, and it stops, and it just starts flattening out, and it becomes a table. So now it's sitting there, and then when they put the person on it, the table molds around them and just holds them there, which the grays can put their hands in and out of all day long. It doesn't faze them or anything else, but it's a physical thing that holds them there. And then the gray will point, and then all of a sudden you'll see this tube start coming out the wall. As it gets closer to you, it starts to get a set of instruments on the end of it. When they're done, everything goes back and it disappears. Somehow or another, the ship itself just knows it can create, I guess it has the ability to shift its matter around. It's almost like a changeling in a way. The grays really can't do it, but the ship can do it itself. But the ship also looked like it was designed to do this, and the ships are alive. They're probably sentient. But that's why you know the grays are so much more advanced than the humans or the reptilians. When you hear people talk about the humans and reptilians, yes, they're very advanced, but they're still what I call a flip and click technology. Their hands are used a lot. There's monitors there. There's buttons there. There's other instruments there. They hold a lot of this stuff, like weapons they hold. Grays don't need weapons. They just look at you and you fall. Point a finger at you, fall to the ground. They just that's why I think another reason I think the humans and reptilians are scared of the grays is because telepathically, and they have telepathy, but they have telekinesis as well.
So, really?
Yeah. So I don't think the other two races want to mess with them because they're just not a match for them.
Well, I got a question about the ships. You said they're living, right? The ships are living, which means they have intelligence. And do we? And have any idea what they're based on? Is it carbon, nitrogen? You know, being a biochemist, that
best guess would be some type of carbon. It's probably something way. It's probably a carbon molecule, but it's probably been changed and enhanced because a ship can become. Well, you know, carbon can be soft or hard, so it just depends how you make it. So, and the ship's the same way. I mean, if something's coming in and it's a certain type of impact, the ship can stiffen and even repel it. Or it can become soft and catch it like a catches mid. They're just a lot of things these ships can do that the other ones can't. And the reptilians and human ships are solid. They're built in design. They're mechanical craft. I mean, way more advanced than anything we have. And their electronics are all wireless. There's no wired connection from electrical source to electrical source. So you can't even see what powers them because whatever it is invisible. And apparently it doesn't hurt them because it's moving all around their ship and powering everything. Maybe it moves along from section to section. You know what, Josh? That's a good thing. If you've ever seen the movie The Late Great Planet Earth, The Forbidden Planet, wrong movie. The Forbidden Planet, their technologies there are based on a wireless type technology. There's no electrical connection from 1 meter to the next meter to the next. It's all transmitted next to each other. So, and the closest thing today we would have to that, Marsha, would be that electric tube technology where it's a glass tube and they send the electricity down the tube. That's wireless. But technically it's not wireless because the tube is containing the electricity. Yeah, so wow. It's still running through something. In this society, we don't have the ability to just send electricity around without it jumping and shooting and grabbing shit and killing people.
Now, do they use a question? Because I did my dissertation in superconductivity. Are they, besides plasma, as far as you're involved in superconductivity technology?
I think they're beyond that. Their technology seems to be based on, like, this is what always bothered me about researchers back in the day, especially 60s, 70s, and 80s. They always talk, UFOs got to have this kind of drive, that kind of drive. No, because 99% of everybody who sees a UFO tells you the same thing. It was there, it was gone. They don't tell you it streaked across the sky or left a thing. It was there, it was gone. It was like a door opening and closing 1 minute. It was there,
So like in a different dimension, basically.
Yeah, some type of gate. Okay.
I want to get this in, too, because we talked about the idea of alternate, explanations. And, my specialty in physics is string theory, superstring theory, and M theory, and that they postulate the existence of at least 7, 8, 9 other spatial dimensions. And that kind of are in between our world. So that would explain a lot of this, maybe. They can move outside the law of physics, pop in, pop out.
The grays definitely can move outside of our dimension. And we found that out was they responded to researchers. Get this, people. So, we used to always hear about missing time cases and other kinds of cases. Right?
Yeah.
Well, they've all been going extinct. There's hardly any missing time cases anymore. You rarely ever hear about missing time cases. It's like gained time or lost time or some other weird stuff. What happened was they realized, well, they're tracking us through missing time. Well, if we do away with missing time. So now what they do is they can take the contactee out of time and space, hold them there for as long as they want, and then bring them back like 10 minutes before they take them or 5 minutes after they take them.
Oh, my God.
So, and because of that, they've made mistakes over the years, and that's how we found out. We found out a couple times, like one of my favorite cases, and I love this case because I had dinner with these people the night before. So we drive down to Pensacola, my wife and I. We have dinner. It's about midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. Girl comes out, takes a picture of all four of us, right? Four good-looking people. The ladies are in dresses. The men's are all dressed up nice. He's all clean-shaved and really handsome. And all the ladies, of course, they're wearing dresses, legs all shaved and everything. So I get this frantic call 7 o'clock the next morning. We're just getting ready to get up and start getting dressed and leave. And they're like, Joe, you got to come over. Something happened. I'm like, what do you mean something happened? We got taken last night. I was like, okay. So I get over there, and your boy answers the door. He's got a beard like this. Now, he was clean-shaven the night before. I mean, this is like 4 weeks worth of growth. She comes out. She's got hair on her leg. Where's the camera? Whoop, that long.
Wow.
That's 3 to 4 weeks worth of growth. So we seen them that night at midnight. They took them. They had to have been gone for 3 or 4 weeks, and then they put them back. Now, we had all this document. Wow. So she went and seen her doctor and asked if there was some kind of like spontaneous hair growth. The doctor started laughing. She said, look, she showed him a picture. She said, I went to bed with clean shaven legs. I woke up with this. And he had no explanation for it whatsoever. So what it looks like is they pulled him out of time. So a couple of months go by. We set up some hypnosis. We start doing hypnosis, and we found out they had him. They had him for weeks. But what was weird about it is they weren't always conscious. Yeah, they weren't always conscious during the time. Something I learned early on is when you ask a contactee, it's been taken a lot, can you come up with 50, 100 hours worth of experiences? Most of them can't. That's because a good chunk of the time they spent on the ship is asleep.
I was going to ask you that. Is that so they're really unconscious for most of the experiments?
Yeah. Well, not always. Now, if they're keepers or advanced contactees, they'll be brought on board the big ships. There, you're allowed to interact with their computer. So this is weird, but you can link your brain to their computer so you can learn all kind of stuff and store it in their computers. And when you need it, you just physically, I mean, mentally linked back within all the knowledge is in your head, but it's not knowledge you can bring back here with you. It's not accessible. Our brains cannot handle a lot of it, but it can be linked up to those master computers and use it back and forth like that. So they tell you can get a PhD in a day on board the ship because everything you need is there and it's all downloaded in your brain at one time. But the problem is you can't store it there. So when you leave, the information is ciphered back to the hard drive. And when you come back, it's not in your head anymore. That's why we get down. Okay.
This is incredible. This reminds me of a story. You remember Dr. Patrick Flanagan, right? You know, the guy who wrote The Pyramid Power. And he was a very close friend of mine. In fact, he wrote the foreword to my my Decoding the Pyramid book published by Barnes & Noble. This is out of print, so I'm not trying to sell my book. But he told me. I don't like to push my books. He told me that when he was younger, and I don't know if this is public or not, but he told me this, that basically a ship came up and people came out and hooked them up like, an EEG type of thing and fed information into them. And after that, he read every book in his library, like in a month and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, that happens more than you think. I mean, it's kind of crazy how this stuff pans out. But I know we got to get out of here. Let me see something before we jump out of here. Where is?
Oh, can you give out your website again, Joe, and people who
Oh, guys, www.icar1.com. Yeah, you put the number one in there. Well, the Agricultural Reserve owns ICAR, too, so it's the international something for...
And I'll link it up on my wall, too, so people can contact you and join. But I'd like to get more involved in this.
And besides the information, it's a lot of fun. Marissa, to answer your question that you answered me earlier, and I forgot, it's Dr. John Mack. Yeah, he's the only PhD researcher in the alien abduction field. Yeah, or was, because he's passed now. Mm-hmm. He's a great – he was a very serious guy. He almost lost his tenure over this because he was a tenured professor when he started coming out to talk about this. He had learned so much that he couldn't, deny it anymore. He was just like, there's something real going on here.
One quick thing too. I know you and I work really closely with Stan Friedman. We both were very good friends, and I've also worked with Jess Marcel Jr. The son of the who's in MD Ear, Nose, and Throat. We got to do another show together and talk about our work and relationship with those kind of giants.
Yeah, I'll have to bring you on mine. And that way we'll have more time. Let me look where I got it because I've been booking up fast.
Yeah, but I want to thank you really for coming on my show. Basically you're my boss. You're the radio network owner. whenever I talk to you, I could talk for hours, and it's so many things that we don't know about each other, and this just blows my mind away.
Let me check on something. I thought I had a guest for April 29th, but for some reason it's an open slot. I could have swore there was somebody there. If there's somebody there, I got something coming open on May 20th. But yeah, I'm getting pretty far booked out these days. But I haven't been doing guests a lot, so now that I'm back doing guests, people are like, "Oh, you're back to doing guests now? Can I come on?" I'm like, "Yeah, you come on, sure." I got a lot of friends in the field, and I don't want to hate on them all. Some of them make me crazy, but the other ones don't really. But anyway, I know we got to get out of here because Heidi's going to be coming up next. But
guys, thank you so much, Joe. Listen, I tell you, I know you're busy, and you got 100 things going, and this has been a joy. I appreciate it, and I tell you one thing: you got me excited about something new, and I really needed that in my life at this point. And
we'll get together. You know? Like I said, by next week when I see you, or sometime during the week, I'll write to you. And I'll find out which one of these dates is right, and we'll get this set up, and then we'll talk more about it. And Stephanie, yeah, we do have a centralist coming up. We got a lot of weird stuff going on right now. The station's in it's having another growth spurt, so we're looking for a couple of shows, but we're adding a lot of stuff on Saturdays. It's a little weird right now. But anyway, as soon as I know what all is going on, I'll get with you. Oh, there's also going to be I wish I thought about this earlier. There's going to be a GoFundMe page going up because we have reporters in the field. It's called Going Viral. So we have reporters crisscrossing the country, and we want to help support them while they're doing it, going out and talking to people about how they're helping help us to get through this. So it's scary stuff. They're only going around people they know are safe or they think are safe, but they're still risking themselves. And one of them has New York plates. I'm hoping he don't get shot along the way. Worried about that, man. Well, I've been hearing bad things about if you're from New York and you're traveling, people want you to go back to where you came from. You think they were giving the Chinese trouble in the United States. They're giving New Yorkers way more trouble.
Oh my God. I'm glad I left New York when I did, but I better let you go. And Joe, this
yeah,
has really been an honor. It's an honor knowing you, and it's an honor being on your radio network. I tell you, you are wonderful. You have a big heart.
And oh, listen, and wait, don't forget, plug your other show right quick before we roll out of here. The one April 11th.
Thank you. Starting April 11th, Lon Milo Duquette, who's the Grand Deputy Master of the OTO, the Aleister Crowley Group, you know, and him and I are going to have called Midday Magic at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time for an hour. And I always look at Lon as one of the top ritual magicians in the world, and I'm very much one of the top academic, you know, magicians, even though I'm ritual too. And together, I think we've been friends for years. He's been my mentor. It's going to be a fun show. We have no agenda. We're just going to get on like you and I and have fun, take questions. And so that's April 11th, Midday Magic with Dr. John DeSalvo and Lon Milo Duquette. Thanks for letting me get that plug in. And Joe, thanks so much. And listen, be safe down there in New Orleans, okay?